Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, master storyteller David Crabb talks about auditioning in Hollywood. And folks, it's not pretty.
Jack says to me one day, he's like, hey babe, I know this is weird, but I have this audition. It's for real gay couples. And I wonder if you would come with me. So we go to the place to audition. If you get me in a room and you want me to like charm someone or tell them a story, like, oh please, get me in my space. I love it. The guy made me make weird muscles. And I look at Jack and I'm like, what is going on?
Today on Storyworthy, we talk about auditioning in Hollywood with one of the finest storytellers in Los Angeles, David Crabb. Stay close.
This is David Crabb. I have a mouthful of donuts. You're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. I hope you guys had a chance to listen to the show last week with director Michael Pressman. David, I don't know if you know who Michael Pressman is.
No, I
don't. He's a director. And I don't have a lot of directors. He does primarily one-hour dramas, and he's done like dozens of the L.A. Laws.
Oh, that was my jam. I love that show so much.
Yeah, he's done like a lot of stuff, one-hour dramas with like Edie Falco and some important people. But anyway, he came forth with the story, Finding My Soulmate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's on Marriage Number 4.
Oh, wow.
So he found a few.
So he's like my dad. My dad's four times now.
Is that right?
Yeah. You know, well, four divorces too. But
four marriages, four divorces. Yeah. I think that sometimes people get married knowing that it's not going to work out.
Right.
But sometimes it's easier to get married and split than to just break up with a girlfriend or boyfriend.
I think it is. Here's the weird deal. I mean, what if I was to tell you that marriages 2 and 4 were to the same woman 20 years apart? Like, that's kind of next level bonks, right? Like, that's a little...
Wait, so what happened?
My dad remarried his wife that he had when I was 5, when I was about 22.
So, and then they divorced twice
again.
As well.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's very difficult. That's like passion, you know, where you love somebody and you hate somebody.
Yep. It's like time heals all wounds to a point. It's like, I feel like the lesson I got.
But you can't live with them. You can't live without them.
Mm-mm.
And that's two dysfunctional people coming together.
Yep. Probably. You said it.
Probably, yeah.
I didn't
say it. I don't even know your dad. David Crabb, you bring forth the topic auditioning in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's interested in the auditioning, and everybody's interested in Hollywood.
Which, so hilariously, it actually is very much a story about my soulmate. So it's you kind of get a more bang for your buck.
Funny.
It's a double whammy, yeah.
Well, you know, I've been out here for 21 years, and I have primarily auditioned and booked commercials, like dozens and dozens of them.
Yeah.
And so my odds are pretty good now because I've been doing it so long.
Yeah.
But even when I say my odds are good, I mean I'll go out of the house, like I'll have an audition with full makeup on and fully dressed and going to wherever I have to go, the Valley or Santa Monica or wherever.
Right.
And I'll do that 30 times before I book a job.
Yeah.
And those are very good odds.
Yeah.
So that's how hard it is.
Yeah, no, it's very hard.
And that's the usual, you know, the first audition, then you've got to go to the callback. So if there's 30 auditions and I get 20 callbacks, which is pretty good ratio. Then I'll book one.
Yeah. What have I seen you in? What have I seen you in most recently?
I had that Aleve spot running for 2 years recently with the Joanne.
I'm looking at your face as you told me that. Yes.
The hairdresser. Yeah.
Wow.
That was an interesting role for me because I wasn't playing a mom.
Yeah.
Because usually I'm a mom, and my breakdown is casual mom, pretty but average.
Thank you. Thank you, Kester.
So that's just where I want to be. I don't want to be, you know.
Pretty but average.
Yeah, I don't want to be like smashing, or I don't want to turn heads.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to stand out, but I need to be right on average. So
right on
that's
average.
That's what you're looking at right here.
Please create a solo show called Right on Average.
I should.
About your casting experiences.
Oh, man. I have a reel that I played for my 50th birthday. I did this. I put a compilation.
You're over 50? I'm not blowing sunshine here. Really?
I'm 85. Yes. No, I am.
I'll have what she's having.
But I put a compilation together of these commercials that I've done, and it was so funny. I swear to God, people were laughing so hard, they made me rent it again right away because, you know, I cut it so tight, and I've done so many ridiculous commercials, including eating cat litter on television.
What can they even sell?
World's best cat litter.
So good you can eat it? That was literally the idea?
Because it's made of whole kernel corn.
Oh, my God.
And I'm dressed as a scientist, and you can look it up on YouTube, and it has like hundreds of thousands of hits because it's a lady eating cat litter, and that would be me.
That is, wow, it's something. What did you actually eat on set?
I ate the cat litter.
The cat litter.
Yeah.
Which is really just like kernels of corn?
It was so foul. It just tasted like clay, you know, like a piece of dirt.
But
then there was also people on set who had to smell urine. I didn't have to smell the
but
urine.
They didn't have to smell real urine, did they?
Yeah, they had like...
Why would you do that?
And then they have like a regulator on set, like who's making sure that these things are happening. You know what I mean? Like oversight. Oh,
that is, I mean, that like...
So oh. I've done a lot of auditions.
Wow.
But I haven't done a lot of, theater, as it were, and I haven't done a lot of, I don't have a theatrical agent. You know, I don't think people realize how hard getting a theatrical agent is out here in Los Angeles, as well as the competition is just outrageous because there's so much talent.
There is. It's intense. I don't know how... I mean, I'm a performer, but in a different context now, right. And I just don't know, you know... I don't know how they do it. It's so hard.
Neither do I. Anyway, I'm anxious to hear your story auditioning in Hollywood. I know it's going to be a good one. But before we get to David's story, you guys, I wanted to remind you to head over to storyworthypodcast.com. And I won't say more than that, you know? Because once you're there, then it's like, do this, click here, do this, join my mailing list. So I'm not going to say that. But I will say, I appreciate when you share the show. Do you know what I mean? I always tell you guys, it's like, word of mouth. That's the bottom line. Do you know what I mean, David? It really is.
Yeah.
It has to be.
Tell people. Hashtag it. At it.
At it. At it. Exactly. All right, you guys. He's here right now. David Crabb. He's a writer and a performer and a storyteller, like we said. He's also hosted The Moth here in Los Angeles. And his solo show, Bad Kid, which I got to tell you, just the tableau itself, David, is so funny. Your pictures are so funny because you're this goth kid. Mm-hmm. Growing up in the suburbs of Texas?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And it is just, you're so fish out of water. It's so funny. So your solo show, Bad Kid, was a New York Times critics pick. And also the memoir, the book, was released in 2015 by Harper Perennial, which is amazing. You're also a professor of autobiographical storytelling at Occidental College, and you've directed and taught storytelling here in the United States and Australia, Ireland, Canada, which is super fun to travel and do this. You've also worked with The Moth, the Story Studio, and Upright Citizens Brigade. And you guys can also catch two of your podcasts, which are both on Apple Podcasts. One is called Stories in Session, and the other is called A Special Presentation, which is about retro television.
Yeah.
I love that concept when you bring people on to talk about their favorite television shows.
I just like when anyone... that's one of my favorite things when I see storytellers do it. Anyone that is geeking out about a thing they love makes a story so much more connective. So to have people come over and someone will just come over and be like, when I say I love the OC, you need to understand. And then I'm like, you... And then you're like, oh, shit, you love... Oh, dang, you love the OC. Like, it's a real thing. So it's always fun. And the way we do it is we actually let the guest give us homework. So they'll say, I want you to watch this Saved by the Bell where she gets addicted
really
to speed. So
that's
we actually,
smart.
Some of us are coming to the table very connected to the show because we also love it. And sometimes a guest is bringing us, like, we don't know this Canadian youth show that was on for 1 year after college. So it's really fun.
Did you ever see that television show called Wonder Chosen?
I love Wonder Shows, and I have the DVD of it.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, I didn't, but my neighbor did,
so
and we would
dark.
Watch that. Super dark, like it's like television
kids,
for kids
Sesame
doing
Street.
News.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah.
news kids doing news, but in a really raunchy way.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a wonderful
show.
Oh,
there was the one, do you remember the one where there was the alphabet? You know how in all the kids shows, the M has eyes and can talk? I'm the letter M!
Right.
And the M got like a botched plastic surgery, and then like... the M had a small M that was the fat taken out of her in a dumpster singing a song about how she missed being in a body. I mean, I was like, it was, we say dark.
Yeah.
It was dark.
It was like so South funny. Park, but even beyond.
Oh,
really, really dark. Super funny. Anyway, I'd like to come on and talk about either Wondershowsen or the Brady Bunch.
You can do either of those. Now, we did do the Brady Bunch sequel show, which a lot of people don't know about, which is called The Brady's, which is like an hour-long drama. Do you know about this? Yeah. It lasted a season. It was a bad idea.
Yeah, I do.
Timmy was in a car crash and like couldn't walk. It was like...
My daughter and I, we watch all the different Brady Bunches. We watch the Christmas specials. Yeah. We watch all of them because they're so funny. And we've got like 3 or 4 trivia books. We just, I don't know. It's like a cult thing, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, anyway, so yeah, I'm anxious to start listening to a special presentation. Yeah. And you guys can find David over on Twitter and Instagram at the David Crab with 2 B's. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for David Crab.
So when people ask what I do, you know, maybe some of you who work in media arts have this, you know, I tell them it's a very complex sort of list, right? I'm like, oh, I do some freelance teaching, I do performance, I'm working on a new book. And I tell them all that, and they're like, oh, that's fascinating. They're like, what does your husband do? And then when I say, oh, well, he's also a performer, teaches some piano, they go, oh. And there's always a little lilt in the O. It's like they wanted me to say, well, he's a very wealthy facial reconstructive surgeon, right? You want to give that answer that lets someone know, oh, thank God you have that security so you can follow your crazy, whatever you're doing right now, teaching your little class and doing a solo show. And the thing is, I've known performers and actors and puppeteers, for that matter, who have partners that have more secure jobs. And that works for them. But for me, you know, I've been with my guy for over 14 years, and I would not have it any other way. I love dating someone else that works, you know, in entertainment in a multitude of ways. Commercial actor, theater actor, pianist. And when we met, you know, in New York many years ago, we were actually both very sort of straightforward actors. That was what we were doing. And I loved being with him because we sometimes would go to the same auditions. I always remember one time we had the same audition on the docket. And, you know, it was an audition that looked suspect. It was in a weird place. And it was kind of like, what's this production company? They also made a foot fetish video that I was like, I don't know. And when we went, we were an hour apart. So we got to warn each other. When I went, the guy made me make weird muscles. Like he was like, make muscles, like biceps. And I was a little beefier than, but it was like, why? And then an hour later, he had my husband, who's very handsome and thin and tall, turn around several times before saying, do you have any fat I can't see anywhere? And my husband was like, what? And he's like on your back. It was the weirdest thing, right? So I love this. I love being able to be with someone you can share all those nutty, like, entertainment, you know, stories. And, you know, I like sitting at our kitchen table. When I lived in New York, I probably auditioned for Special Victims Unit or some Law and Order probably 15 times. Lots of callbacks. I always got very close, and it never worked. And I love sitting at the table with Jack and reading, like, he made me do it, man! Like, I just love doing that, right? Just being able to work, it felt like my whole life was kind of in this, like, cool actor art space with him. And I, you know, damn the security, right? So, but then as the years went on, things changed. I got into storytelling and nonfiction work. I started doing more memoir writing and solo work. And then my husband got more into playing piano, teaching a little bit. We moved to LA about 3 years ago, and for him, things immediately took off in the commercial acting sphere. We'd been here a month, and he got cast as the Home Depot Father's Day guy. And as a gay man with a really, my husband literally looks like kind of like peak era Rock Hudson mixed with like George Clooney. He's like, people are like, how did you? I'm like, I know. I don't know how I got it either. I got a lot of jokes from my gay friends at Father's Day over like, daddy, because like my husband was the Home Depot dad. But, you know, he got this gig. He was doing all this commercial stuff. He got this like Golden Corral thing. So while his acting was gearing more towards commercial, I was doing a lot more art, like solo pieces, teaching college, hosting with the Moth. And there's a thing about auditions, straightforward commercial auditions, that have always been rough for me, and that is print auditions. Now, if you get me in a room and you want me to like charm someone or tell them a story, like, oh, please, get me in my space. I love it. If you want me to stay stoically still, because it's always the same thing. I would go into the room, and you know, there's no privacy. There's all the people like behind a rope. They're all watching the way you express joy, which feels very inauthentic to me. The guy taking the photo is always like, some guy that's too old to be dressed like a skater at Astor Place the way he is. He's like 38 with a digital camera. He's got like cap on sideways with a tag on it and like shorts, like cargo shorts. And he's always like, okay, and this is the way it always works. If you're not a part of this, this is always the way this still, okay, you walk up to the camera. They're like, okay, can you just give me a straight face? So you just barely smile. You just look in the camera. Great, I'm good. And then like, okay, a light smile. And then the light, now, the light smile I do okay, but that's when my anxiety revs up about the way that I am projecting. And then they're like, okay, show me little teeth. And then it's like my face becomes disconnected from my mind. Like I'm so actively thinking about what happiness looks like that it becomes like a grimace, like I've seen it. And then when they're like full smile, I look like one of those like Easter Island stone faces, do you know what I mean? Just like this frozen. And I can't tell you how many times I would go in these auditions and then I would leave and as I walk by, I would look at my giant face on the iMac being like, oh my God, like I'm never got any of those because I can't do that. My husband, however, the minute he hears a shutter click or like an iPhone, it's just like blue steel times 10. He's so good at it. So I was happy to not be doing that kind of work in LA. And we had probably been here maybe a year when Jack says to me one day, he's like, hey, babe, I know this is weird, but I have this audition. It's for real gay couples. And I wonder if you would come with me. And I said, I don't know. I just feel like he's like, no, it's going to be like, it's real couples. And I'm like, so does that mean I just get to like, you know, like, I don't know, like tell little stories and like talk about them. He's like, yeah, like that. I was like, okay, I'll go. I was kind of actually excited about it, if I'm being honest. So we go to the place to audition. We open the door. There's a sea of two things, super hot gay couples, which are so, it's like a Benetton ad from the 90s. It's like an Asian guy with a muscly black guy and like a Puerto Rican muscly guy with like a guy with a British accent. It's like just so, just like hot gay couples and little boys. There is like an island, almost like a mountain of like 5 to 7 year old boys. They are screaming. They are raging. Two of them have their headshots rolled up into like swords and they're jamming them in each other's faces. And I look at Jack and I'm like, what is going on? And he's like, it's got to be a different audition. I'm sure there's like two spaces. And I'm like, okay, cool. No problem. So I'm sitting there. And as Jack goes up to the wall to like check in where the door is, I look at this like mountain of boys. Now, I like kids. I love my nephew and I have a lot of nieces, but there's a thing specifically about boys from the age of like 5 or 6 to 7 or 8 where I want them to go away somewhere so they can just like pick their nose and talk about how girls are disgusting and just come back after that, you know, just like the end of elementary school, they get cool, you know? And this is just that age. They're screaming and yelling. And I look at Jack, and Jack is taking a long time at the door, and I notice that he's reading the wall. He's just staring at it, and then we catch eyes, and he looks at me, and he says, babe, come here. You need to look at this. So I go up to the wall. It is a storyboard for the commercial. Beneath it are a stack of scripts, which are multi-pages that we each have to have. The storyboard is easily 50 panels. It is two gay guys. They are in Syria. They're at an orphanage. Cut to them in a hallway holding hands. They're anxiously looking through a window. They see a young Syrian boy. Someone says, come in a room. Then there's a scene, dialogue in the scene, where we're sitting at a desk. We talk about what we wanted, close up holding our hands. Do you think he would be happy with us? Cut to at the airport. We're boarding a plane. We're with the boy. The boy seems scared and terrified. And I look at my husband and I have more dialogue about like, what can we do to make him feel better? Exchange, exchange, exchange. We get on the airplane. He's sitting on the seat between us. He starts crying. One of us takes like a small toy that we got in Syria out of our bag and we pass it behind the other like I got him this. And then when we land, scene in the airport, we get off the plane. One of us has dialogue. We kneel in front of the boy. We give it to him. He smiles, but he still seems nervous. Cut to a cab is pulling up in front of our beautiful two-story house that we have with like hedges in the garden. The storyboard of it's gorgeous. We get out of the car. The boy looks up at the house like, oh my God, it's so amazing, but I'm also terrified. My husband and I, we hold hands. We look at each other. It's going to be okay. We go into our gorgeous foyer. The little boy seems so terrified. The house is too big. We say, your room's upstairs. The boy runs up the stairs. Dialogue, 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 a whole page of script. We go up to the stairs and then we open the bedroom door. The boy looks in the bedroom with all the toys and a bed and he falls on the bed and he cuddles this stuffed animal. My husband and I look at each other in the door frame. We cry a single tear. We hold hands. End of commercial. This commercial is for a bank, P.S. No idea how they're connected, right? So I'm looking at the script in my hands and I'm looking at Jack and I'm like, this is everything I don't want to do. And right as I'm thinking this, they're like, someone comes out from the room and they have their little clipboard and they're like, David, Jack, Rainbow. Rainbow erupts from the mountain of boys. Rainbow is maybe a six-year-old boy. He is he's a beautiful black boy. He has like caramel curls. He's beautiful hazel eyes. He's in a little blazer with arm patches and like high water slacks. He looks like a tiny hipster accountant. He's so cute. He runs past us screaming with his head shot, like literally hits us to go into the room. He is bouncing off the walls. He's like, did anyone say, do you want to see a somersault? I can do a somersault. I can see a cartwheel now. I can do all sorts of stuff. Do you want to see what I can do? I don't know. He's doing this, and I'm looking at Jack. I'm still processing the script, let alone that we had this tiny, like, fake child from Syria. And as this is happening, the guy who's wearing the sideways cap and the cargo shorts behind the camera is like, Rainbow. And Rainbow, like, literally, like, pops, like, with his hands on his hips to attention. Like, he's like, Rainbow's been doing this. Do you know what I mean? Pops in place, hands on hips, cute little smile right between me and Jack. Like, right in the frame of the camera. The kid is so good. I'm threatened by him already as we begin. So, we're standing there. The guy casting it, he looks at us and he's like, welcome. And we're like, hi. Casually, Jack and I, we both have a lot of kids in our life, so our hands are on Rainbow's shoulders. He seems cool with it. He looks up, smiling very well. The guy casting the commercial starts asking us a few questions about our name, where we're from. And then the guy says, So tell me about family. And I'm like, okay, this is where I get to shine. And I say, well, Jack and I come from very different families. He's one of five, Pennsylvania Dutch, beautiful house, landmarked in Bucks County. I'm the only child of a single mother. We lived a hard scrabble. And then the guy's like, dude, I'm so sorry. I hate to cut you off, but I just mean like your family. Like, you know, do you want to have kids? And the question is, like, sitting there, like, do you want to have kids? And Jack even has a little bit of a beat, and he says, yes. And I want to say yes because I realize that I haven't thought about the answer to this question in years. Jack and I, for years when we were together, we talked about what it would be like to be gay dads and have kids. This was something that was, like, on the table. You know, and I realize I haven't thought about having kids in a long time, that I've just let, like, the pressure of how much money it would cost in the surrogate and all the work that we would have to do with our lack of security, I've let it kind of, like, eclipse the idea of, like, being a dad, you know? And I'm asking myself, like, am I okay with that? And as I'm thinking about this in this silence that feels like forever, it's probably 4 seconds, I realize that Rainbow is looking back and forth. He's looking up at us, he looks at Jack, and he looks at me, and his eyes are getting bigger. And I suddenly realize Rainbow is having a moment where he realizes that he is the child of two parents, one of which does not have a vagina. This is a look I've seen in a child's face before as they put together gay. And he is, like, thinking and thinking. And then all of a sudden he says, who is the lady? Which one of you is the lady? And he's blurting the question out to the room with real genuine sweet, like, I don't get it. Who is the lady? Are you the lady? I don't understand who the lady is. And as he's doing this, the cargo short cap guy who's shooting the commercial is literally, his face is like sinking behind the camera because he is trying so hard not to laugh. Jack is stumbling through words. He literally at one point says something about gender isn't binary. And he's so nervous. He's using these words for like a six-year-old child. Like, gender's not a binary thing. It's not black or white. And I'm just sort of being like, when you're gay, it's not. We're all just like barfing out words to this poor, confused child. And he is just saying, lady, who's the lady? Who are you? And then finally, the guy running the commercial, he composes himself and he's like, Rainbow. And then Rainbow snaps to attention. He's like, we need to shoot this. So we all step up our game. We proceed to shoot in that little room with chairs set up for the airplane, chairs set up for the back of the car, the bedroom at the end. We go through all the scenes. We find him in the orphanage. Little Rainbow looks at us. He takes our hand. We walk into the car. We do the scene in the airplane where we like pass the thing and he like sees it there and he looks at me like he's genuinely sad. We do the thing where we go to the foyer and then we take him, you know, upstairs that aren't there. But then when we do the bedroom scene, this kid like runs into the room with like real like top-notch Christmas commercial glee on his face. Like, he just erupts in joy and falls onto this platform that's the bed. And I hold Jack's hand in, like, this fake doorway, and I look at him, and I actually feel, like, a real tear. Like, I'm like, wow, this is what this would feel like. And then the guy directing the commercial says, great, we got it. And then Rainbow walks up to us, and I'm still sort of in all my feelings. Do you know what I mean? And then Rainbow looks at me and says, you're the lady. You're the lady. You're the lady. He starts announcing it. He's screaming it to like getting the commercial. And all those feelings of like, maybe we should work hard. We could have a savings. I look at Jack and I'm like, let's get out of here. We're going to go. I need to get away from this. We couldn't run faster from the throng of screaming boys through all the muscly gay dudes. We got into our car and we drove home and we laughed so hard about this. I've never laughed so hard in a 10-minute car ride in my whole life. And I have continued to laugh with Jack about that story and so many of these other weird predicaments we've gotten into as artists and actors in these situations. And, you know, over the last year or so, we've really sort of like recommitted to a lot of things we want to do. And I think we both realized that we're kind of okay not having kids. Because I like my life with him. And, you know, people talk about security and all the stuff you get when one of you has that. And I would rather be with him until the day I die without that security, but just knowing that we can have experiences like that. Weird, crazy experiences that I think a lot of people don't have because we're both passionate about art and making weird shit and having bizarre experiences. We didn't get the part. We didn't get cast. I blame Rainbow because he didn't look Syrian. I'm kidding. We didn't get the part probably because I smiled like an Easter Island head. But that was the first and last audition that I will ever go on with my husband.
That is so hilarious, David. That is just one of the funniest stories I've ever heard. Now, did your husband's agent send him out on that? Or did he find that on his own?
Yeah, and my husband's agents are really nice, really cool people. And Jack is like, wherever Jack goes, he's one of, like, if Jack is at a thing, at a restaurant where he has a job, or he's he's like one of the favorites. He's just a good, I'm not like blowing sunshine.
So his agents said,
so his agents love him, and they talk real to him. And because they do, they knew me. He had shown them some of my stories. So I think they just even almost assumed without even asking, like, oh, he's done that.
Yeah.
He's funny. Send them.
Bring your husband. That'll work out well.
Yeah.
But he didn't get a call back, neither of you. Because sometimes in that situation, they'll like go with him and then they'll pick another person. You know what I mean? Or maybe go with you and not him. But so neither of you got called again.
Uh-uh.
It seems like it was a long audition.
Oh, my gosh. No, I think it's just the nature of the story. I mean, we were probably in that room with Rainbow for no more than 7 minutes.
That's a pretty long time, though. But that's a good amount of time. Because certain auditions, you walk in and they just say, okay, slate your name. Let's see your hands back and forth. And then they say, just look at the camera and say, I don't want to go.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And then you leave. So you can literally be in a room for a minute or even less than a minute. And especially if it's print, they might just take your photo and you walk out.
Yeah.
So it's like, I always said there should be drive-through auditioning, you know, when you just kind of drive up in the car, they come out and either just wave you on because you're not the look or you are the look.
This felt like Fincher was doing this. I mean, this felt like, I mean, one of the most impressive things.
David Fincher.
Yeah, I mean, this felt big. I mean, one of the most impressive things about it to me, and one of the things that, you know, I mean, the story is very funny to me, but I really did have a moment in the audition where like,
you were in it.
Yeah. I was in it. And part of it was that they literally recreated the nature of the space. You know, there were like 8 chairs for the airplane that were like 3 and 3 and then 2. So even in the bedroom, they moved stuff and there was a platform. Like, we really, it was almost like if you felt like you were wearing like virtual reality headgear,
right,
that you could like, it felt like being in the space.
That's really great. The casting director, you know, for folks out there that don't know, you know, they'll often set up the casting room to reflect what the commercial is. So if it's a car commercial, they might have a fake steering wheel there. Or if you're eating dinner, like I was on a callback yesterday, and so they just have paper plates there with forks. You don't put the fork in your mouth or anything. Yeah. It's just an idea to have somewhere to go.
Yeah.
And so, it sounds like they set up like 4 different scenarios.
Yeah.
Because you said there was the
bedroom.
They
just moved chairs around real fast. There was an airplane. There was a car. There were seats we sat in to talk to the adoption agency person.
Right.
And then when we went to Rainbow's bedroom, our Syrian refugee orphan child, there was a little platform for him to jump onto, like for his bed.
Was this for a local bank? What bank was it?
I believe it was Capital One.
So it was a full on, like a level one commercial. I forget what they call it, a level one or something.
And I've not researched it that intensely, but if anyone listening's like, I've seen that Capital One ad, please let me know. Because I want to know that it exists somewhere, and I want to see. I love when you don't get something and you get to see what they went with.
Yeah. Oh, well,
I love that.
You know, it's so frustrating sometimes for me being in a room when people don't look like me. It's hard because then they don't know what they want. If I go in the room and there's six or seven other blondes just like me, then I feel like, okay, I'm in the ballpark.
Yeah.
Because they know what they want. But if I walk in a room and there's brunettes, older women, younger women, a different color, then it's like, this sucks.
Yeah.
This sucks because they could go any direction and it has nothing to do with you.
I also love when
it really never does have much to do with you.
Well, right?
There's an essence, but it's so much luck.
Well, I love when you don't get something and then you get to see that they went a really different way. Years ago, I had a Law & Order Special Victims Unit audition, one of many. I think I went through three rounds on that. I got really close.
What did you go out for? What kind of roles for that?
Well,
like cops or no?
Well, no. This is the... Can I tell a quick anecdote?
Please.
It's brief. Okay, so I very quickly had two good auditions for Law & Order, and then I just started jumping to the office of a director or producer. And it was just me and him reading, right? And I probably on two different... parts got three rounds, like almost to the end, right? So I get called in for this thing. I get the script, and it's every Law & Order kind of has the same, you know, this type of Law & Order, right? There's only a few archetypes. It's the one where a woman is raped or murdered and they find out that like some pedophile that's like a bottom feeder that lives in his mom's basement has like webcams, and he's like a sniveling idiot in a hoodie, and you think he's done it the whole time, and then 10 minutes before the end you realize that that was just to get you to the CEO of the company that's like the dead girl's best friend and the millionaire did it, that guy, right? Who's granted a pervert but never a murderer.
Right.
They always want me for
that's
that.
That's you. Interesting.
Yes. Yeah, so they brought me in for that part. They brought me in, and I was really, really, I was at Jack at our table. I was like, I didn't do it. I just like watching the girls. I remember doing it. And I didn't get the part. I was so upset. And like 2 months later, because that show's turnaround's fast, I saw on like Hulu, I was like, this is the show. So I said, Jack, babe, when you come home from work, you remember the one that I almost got? Let's watch it. So we watched the episode. First of all, totally different guy. They went through this 6'4 guy with black hair. Okay. I know that Law & Order is an over-the-top show, and there's a lot of scenery eating. I accept that. This guy, there's a scene where, like, let's say the line that I read was like, I didn't do it, man, I just like watching them. He said, I didn't do it, and beat his own head. He beats his forehead, and they cut away to Mariska Hargitay in a way that actually looks like it's not her acting, it's the actress looking at him like, wow, he's giving too much. I was like, we joked, we're like, this guy's never going to have a career. It was so intense. I remember that talk soup? Talk Soup show, they did a segment about him
being so over the top. Outrageous.
That actor's name is Adam Driver.
Wow.
He went on to be just fine.
Wow.
Adam Driver, terrible actor that took my part. So
that is so
you
funny.
You never know.
Yeah, you just never
it's
know.
So crazy.
Yeah. And then your husband, you said he models as well, or you're saying he can just turn it on quickly?
Oh, he used to do, I mean, he still goes out for print, but he can turn it on really. I mean, he's got like this like million watt smile. It's just like traditionally handsome, like a premature gray, you know, salt and pepper, but like a baby face. And
hey, listen, how do you like LA?
I love it. We have had a crazy time here. You know, we moved here election year, which was its own kind of nightmare.
And that you're from New York?
From New York. We were there 16 years.
How did you choose where you live?
I was writing and teaching, and I still do maybe at least half my work out of the city I live in, so mm-hmm. I'm flexible. And my husband, he'd been doing a lot of stage and wanted to do more like film, whether it's commercial or legit.
Yeah.
So, and we had a few friends that moved out here and really wanted to do it. So, yeah. The election year was weird. 2017 was a little bit weird. 2018 was just, we got evicted. Our dog died. It was like a country song. We had
Why
a rough time.
Why would you
time.
Get evicted?
We signed a lease for this house, and then the people decided they wanted to like sell it. So we were, but.
Did they have to pay you out? Or
we
whatever?
Didn't fight for it as much because we I were see. Taking our dog back and forth to a cancer treatment center for months. And you know when you decide that you only have so much emotional bandwidth and that you got to get stepped over in
Totally. You have to decide what hill you're going to die on.
Right.
And what you're not going to die on.
Yeah.
What can you let go?
And,
I agree.
But all that being said, you know, we always talk about it where even in moments since we've lived here, which is almost 3 years now, that seem fraught. We're like, I would not, there's nowhere I'd rather be going through this.
Yeah.
Like, we imagine, I love New York, I love it, but going through some of the stuff that we've gone through here without this beautiful weather and space and a car to drive out somewhere, in your frozen Greenpoint apartment.
Sunlight, mm-mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, we have a common mutual friend, Gail Thomas.
Oh, I love Gail.
And I love Gail.
She was a student of mine.
Over 20 years. Yeah, she's a dear friend.
And now she's a teacher. Yeah, she's awesome.
She came on Storyworthy when she was in town in the spring, last spring. And the first thing she said was, you know, the light, how much she wishes she had the light in New York, because not only is it not that sunny all the time, but, you know, when you have buildings right next to you, obviously you just don't get that much sunlight.
Yeah, you don't. There's a thing about New York that I miss. I mean, there's stuff that's true about it. It never sleeps, and there's an energy, and there's this, like, kinetic,
and the
vibe.
Restaurants and the bars. It's cool. Yeah, yeah.
But,
and the shows.
I'll take Horizon Lines. I mean, I like we were joking about Trader Joe's earlier, like, before we started.
Yeah.
Trader Joe's, like, is a perfect example of what is really a small thing to a lot of people, but in New York, Trader Joe's was a thing I could never go to because I had to think, how do I get the groceries home? The line at the Trader Joe's was always a nightmare. There are articles written about the fights that break out at the Trader Joe's in Lower Manhattan.
Wow. Yeah, they say the Trader Joe's, I think, at 42nd Street is the busiest Trader Joe's in the whole country.
Yeah, there's that one. There's the downtown one. And, like, just living in a place where I'm going to park in the parking lot in my car and get as many damn groceries from Trader Joe's. It's so simple to so many people.
I know. Also, if you live in New York, you just can't get a new couch. It's just not that simple.
You can't on the sidewalk, and then you have to call someone, has a truck. How can you get it? Yeah.
And then you can't necessarily open your window.
Yeah.
So it's a fine line, and then I'm also a big outdoors person anyway, so I just like being outside.
I love it.
So listen, you do host a lot of the moth gigs out here. You must like it.
Mm. I do. I mainly host the actual touring shows, though.
Oh, that's better even.
Yeah, the slams here, you know, it's funny. The slams in the big cities, like, are very set, like, out here. Like, Brian Finkelstein's hosting. I think Lauren Wiedemann was doing it for a while. But
yeah,
Madison Perry. Carlos Cochran's doing them, I think. So, I mainly host the touring ones, which I love.
And the touring ones are called main stage shows?
They're main stages, so they're not slams. They're, like, curated.
They're curated by who? Who curates them?
So the Moth has, like, a core staff. Like a creative director, and there's a set group of directors there, so they actually work with storytellers from all walks. You know, some of the storytellers, you know, you hear on NPR there, it's an author that has a book that's well known and they might need a month of coaching.
Sure.
Sometimes it's a person who they heard a recording from a slam in Atlanta and they work with that person for 6 months because that story's so amazing, and then they build it up to a 10 11 12 minute story.
So
there's all sorts of different processes, but that core Moth staff, it's growing quickly, but it's not that many people really.
Exciting. Have you ever met George Shaw? Is that his name? George
Dawes Green.
George Dawes Green.
He was in all the New York main stages and slams. A lot of the grand
he
slams.
He started the Moth in 97 in New York, and he lives in, I think, Savannah, Georgia or something.
Yeah,
I think we're friends on
that's where it started.
Facebook. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Because it was like sitting outside and around the light, which would attract moths.
Yep. They would come in a hole through the screen. I like to joke. Sometimes people think it stands for something. And one time on the train, this was years ago in New York, someone said, "What was it? Mother of True Living or something?" Like she had the bag and she was trying to explain what it stood for. And her friend was like, "Oh, that sounds logical." And I didn't say anything. I wanted her to take that into the world.
Well, the Moth was totally the impetus for me to start Storyworthy over 8 years ago.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, exactly. Because I would go to a lot of the Moths here in Los Angeles. I performed in a lot of them. And but when people would get off stage, I would always almost be chasing them out to the parking lot, you know, and then what? And then what? And trying to get the end of the story, because they come on stage, they talk for 5 minutes, and then we never see them again.
Well, I love that when I teach storytelling, I always, a big component of me is I try to remind people to not forget it's a conversation. Because I think sometimes people think of storytelling as this very one-way, ego-driven endeavor. But I think if someone tells a story well, they leave an audience. It's like the magic trick of it. It's like where you're like, oh, I know you now because we got to know each other. You didn't say a damn thing. You were just sitting there in silence.
Yeah.
But when a good storyteller is done, I think it's wonderful when you feel that impetus. Like, we're familiar. I saw you, so I'm going to follow you to the bar and talk to you.
Well, so it also, when you're telling a story, I've been doing it for a long time, but I'm still learning all the time. And my one woman show keeps changing, and you know, it's like a moving, breathing thing.
Yeah.
But you do know when you are connecting.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're on stage live, you are either connecting or you are not connecting, and there is really nothing in between.
Yeah.
So as a performer, you know, I think the idea is just to get more connection and less, you know, less non-connection, and then string that together.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, again, it's just, it's a process, and it, just this period of time has to go by before it sinks in so hard that you're spewing it out in the most natural way.
Yeah.
Listen, you've done it. I'm learning.
Yeah.
And so I really admire how far you've come, and you killed it at Story Smash. You just killed it.
I love that show, and I'm saying this from a real place. Like, granted, you know, it's an entertaining show. It's cool because you have, you know, we had the Goldbergs. Some of the Goldbergs are that night, like judging, and one of the Groundlings who I adore. Like, and it was so fun because of the gimmick, and it's got the wheel. You know, at the same time, it's a really great tool for, like, I teach students, and I think a lot of people have a hard time mining for stories. They either feel like nothing interesting has ever happened in their whole life, or they're those people that, like, guess what's interesting about my life? Everything that's ever happened to me. And you're like, oh, please shut up. And I kind of feel like your show's so cool because it's such a fun way for people to find stories.
Thanks. Yeah, it's an icebreaker game.
Yeah. I mean, you can prepare some of that.
Yeah,
but
the
like,
home
still.
Version is totally, it's going to be better than Pictionary or Trivial Pursuit, you know, because it's got the timer, it's got a wheel, and you spin it, and everybody has a story about kids, because even if you don't have kids, you were a kid.
Yeah.
You know, your story about kids could be easily about Starshine. Wait, what? Who?
A pumpkin patch?
No,
water park?
No, what was your character's name in the story? Rainbow.
Oh, okay. Rainbow. Starshine, though, is so great. If Rainbow becomes a famous child actor who might sue me, I'm changing the name to Starshine.
Rainbow. I love that kid. That kid's
so
a booker.
Great. Oh, yeah. He's going to make it.
Hey, listen, man, thank you so much for bringing your story.
Thank you.
This has just been great. And David, you're going to be at the Lyric Theater here on Hyperion Avenue in Silver Lake on December 15th.
Yes, December 15th, I'm doing my new show, which is called Us and Them and You and Me. And it is half storytelling, half character hybrid. I do a lot of Groundling stuff. So I've been trying to find a way to merge these two disparate interests of mine.
That's so wonderful.
And it should be fun.
Oh, David, I can't wait. Really, that's just great.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up. I want to thank you all so much for tuning into Storyworthy today. And a big thank you to all the sponsors on the show today, because you guys, as you know, when you support my sponsors, you're supporting me. So even if you didn't hear me mention a sponsor today, well, you heard one last week, didn't you? And maybe you've seen my newsletter lately. Have you seen my newsletter? Why don't you get on my mailing list over at storyworthypodcast.com and join my mailing list? All right, you guys, listen, why don't you shoot David Crabb a tweet over there on Twitter at TheDavidCrabb. Tell him you liked a story, and then follow me over there as well at Storyworthy. All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very talented David Crabb, thank you so much, really. Thank you.
Oh, my gosh, thank you. Great.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a Storyworthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.